closer.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your host, Todd Conklin, and today is going to be the most awkward day for me ever known to mankind. It's hotter than crap right now, and it's weird. In Santa Fe, I'm back home, we've just had so much rain, and I'm not being braggy. I mean, I know some of you guys are really desperate for rain, but we've had a lot, and we're not a place that gets a lot of rain. So it's been really interesting. It's gorgeous. Everything is green. Went up to Philmont this week. If you don't know what Philmont is, look it up. It's worth looking up. Poked around a little bit, helped a friend out, had a great trip, and now we're back at it. And that sort of leads us to today's podcast. So today's a little awkward because this podcast is entitled Todd Live in Australia because that's what this is, by request. So a lot of people asked for this, so here it comes. I actually got the sound guy to record my keynote presentation to the meeting I just attended in Perth, Australia. It was actually the 2015 Chamber of Minerals and Energy of Western Australia conference, and it was a big one. Great place. Perth is always fun, super fun, and I always have a great time. Got to spend a lot of time with Sydney Decker and hang out with some cats. The conference itself is really sort of non-classist, if that's a way to say that. It's remarkable. There were hundreds and hundreds of people in the room. It's a beautiful place, beautiful convention center, amazing AV setup, giant wall of video. Cool sound, giant room with black piping and drape. It was really nice. It was really classy. And it was a big meeting. It is a big meeting, clearly, because Western Australia is sort of the mineral basket of all of Australia. And it was clearly well represented. It's a big deal for them. And they had people there from safety team members all the way up through senior leaders at places like Rio Tinto, which is a gigantic mine. And they had, gosh, they had prizes for the best ideas, the best learnings. It was a great conference, which brings us to the podcast today. This is a live feed of me because people said they wanted to hear it, so I thought I would do it. I don't mean this braggy by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I'm kind of on the opposite side of this equation. This is a little awkward and weird. But I did want you to have a chance to sort of hear and experience what a keynote is like in this kind of conference for me. I kind of worked it so it was pretty interactive. It needed to be pretty interactive. I definitely worked it so it was thought-provoking. The room's interesting and they're pretty quiet, as generally I find large Australian groups can be. They can be pretty quiet. They're not attentive. In fact, they're quite attentive. They're super attentive, but they're really thoughtful. And of course, sometimes the message that we all deliver is a very unusual message to people. It's oftentimes the first time they hear somebody say, you know, you can't measure safety success by counting the number of people you kill. That's not that good of a metric. And so they'll chew it around and think about it and talk about it. And that kind of leads us up to the podcast. So without any further ado, because I could talk about this a bunch, I'll talk a little more after the podcast is over. Here is the 2015 CME keynote speech by me, Todd Conklin, introduced by Sydney Decker. Here we go.
I want to introduce you to a man whom I've known for many years now, a dear colleague in the community. This man is universally known as one of the most impressive and larger than life interlocutors of thinking about safety differently. He does this in a style that is unfailingly disarming, delightful, engaging, funny, and interesting. The man has about 25 years of experience as a senior advisor to the director of Los Alamos Laboratory, which deals with high explosives, typically is what they do there. So safety critical stuff. Los Alamos has the claim to be the largest laboratory in the world. And so there's a lot of people working there. Most of them actually better qualified than all of us together, basically, with PhDs in physics and all kinds of other funky science fields. So rather smart people. he has started to augment that role with because of the insights he created and had during his work as senior advisor. Other people and other companies, and these are really the big players in on the world stage when it comes to safety, the Chevrons, the Rios, the big players. They want to hear from him. They want to hear his message. They want to hear about his experiences. And so it is an amazing privilege to once again, I was in Amsterdam with him just a few weeks ago, which happens to be my hometown, Amsterdam in the Netherlands. And we keep running into each other, but never in either of our hometowns, actually. His is Los Alamos and mine currently is Brisbane. But we see each other on various stages across the globe. Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to introduce to you Dr. Todd Conklin.
Wow. Hi, everyone. Thank you, my friend. So if you'll allow me, I just want to start really quickly from here. Can everyone see me? Okay. If I turn like this, did I go away? Is it like a knife blade? Work with me. I know this is a big, dark room. Okay. So to get started, I want to do a couple things. First of all, at your table right now, I'd like you to select a representative. Pick a person who is both good-looking and intelligent. Go. Paul, you only qualify for one of those. Okay, everyone got one? Okay, so I'm going to make you a promise. I'm going to make you a really quick promise before we get started. We're about to run a simulation, and it's really simple. Three promises. Number one, at no point during my presentation will you have to touch each other. Okay, so relax. Nothing, unless you want to. Do you need a hug? You're looking like you might. Yeah, later I'll give you a hug. Number two, there's no public singing. Okay, got that? Right. Number three, I think you're going to find this really interesting, especially after the discussion we just had in the incredible introduction to this conference. So now that you've picked a representative, would that representative stand up really quickly? Just stand up where you are. No touching or hugging. You're so brave. I'm so proud of you right now. Okay, everybody up? We're going to perform a work simulation. It's really simple, and you guys are going to be really good at this. For the people standing up in this room, we are going to count out loud from 1 to 19.
Okay, by way of giving you a little more context, if you've not seen this counting game, it's really a game where you set the room up to do a task, 1 to 19, you heard that. You give them some restrictions around which they can be successful. Numbers have to be in order. They have to be as efficient as possible. And no two people can speak at the same time. And then you sort of let them solve the problem, which is exactly what we did. So I had one person at each table. There must have been, gosh, I don't know, 60, 70 tables. And they were sort of scrambled up in the room, and they had to create this sense of order. And to do that, they tried a bunch of times and failed. And then eventually somebody said, let's raise our hand and count. That failed. And then somebody stepped up and said, we need a leader. I said, who should that be? I wonder. The guy said, I don't know. How about the guy next to me? I said, I think you volunteered. And he got up and actually directed the crowd to count from 1 to 19. Very successful. It's a really great way to show the adaptive nature of problem solving, the emergent nature of how safety sort of appears in a system. And it works really, really well. And that's what happened. So now back to the rest of the speech.
And what you guys did is, based upon those failures, you actually created an emergent solution. And that solution worked actually to get us to success. Now, why that's important is because I'm going to suggest this little simulation has much to tell us about how we do work. Our challenge is that our workers are constantly in these adaptive opportunities, just like you guys were when you were in this room. And because they're in these adaptive opportunities, they have to create ways to do the work successfully. Which leads me to this question. In Western Australia, how do you guys define safety success? Zero harm, zero fatalities. Is that a good definition for safety success? Is safety the absence of an accident? In fact, what I'd suggest is safety is the presence of leadership that emerges, that creates a process, that actually tests that process, that actually ends up pointing at the next person to count. What's amazing about this stupid game is we solved it today in about 5 minutes. If we played this game every single day, you would get amazingly good at managing the capacity for this game to be successful. In fact, I'm going to suggest to you right out of the chute, and I want you to chew on this because my job is to leave you with more questions than answers. It's a pretty low bar, but I'm happy with it, right? I can do that for sure. My job is to say, I think the way you define safety success is coloring the way you perform safety success. And I think our definition of safety is flatly wrong. Let me ask one more question, then I'll go up to the podium. I just got called out on an investigation just a couple weeks ago. It was a big crane operation where they were loading a vessel in kind of a temporary offshore situation. And so they dug kind of a big trench, and they were bringing the vessels in, and they had just a construction crane sort of permanently parked there. And they were loading super sacks on board that vessel. Does everyone know what super sacks are? So they're those big bags that have loops on them. You've seen them. Like if you have to move sand with a crane, without a super sack, you're pretty much screwed. Just saying. It's hard to move sand in a hook. You can move it, but it takes a really, really long time, right? They were hooking up these super sacks to this crane. And does anyone know how you hook them up? They've got four loops on them. You put whatever you're carrying, and then you hook loop one, loop three, loop two, loop four, and then you do the lift. Now, what happens if you've got them hooked that way when you do the lift? This is your part. The sack closes, right? And it lifts up. It's elegant, elegant. And they've been moving these super sacks for weeks. And one Friday, the final load of the day, something happened. Instead of hooking the super sack up loop one, loop three, loop two, loop four, they somehow, for some reason, took a piece of nylon rope and tied the loops of the super sack shut, and then tied the nylon rope to the crane hook. They lifted the load, they made the pick, and they were swinging the load over to the vessel. Now, the place where they were swinging was barricaded. It was a red zone, a drop zone, and they had all the protections that could possibly be there, and no one or no piece of equipment was inside the red zone. As they swing, what's the past tense of swing in Australia? Swang? Swung? Mate? Swine? As they moved that load across that red zone, the load fell. Didn't hurt anyone. Didn't cause any damage. The load fell. Is that a success or a failure? Failure? How many vote failure? Just by show of hands? Okay. How many vote success? How many people don't give a crap? I know you're out there. Yeah, little tiny ones like that. I would tell you how you choose to look at that colors how your organization responds. If you choose to see that as a failure, then someone's going to pay, right? Somehow someone's going to pay. But I would suggest that you could choose to see that as a success because in this case, the safety systems they've created to actually manage the consequence, right? Not kill anybody, not damage any piece of equipment. That's why the barricaded system was there. The safeguards in this event worked perfectly. But how we see that colors how we understand what happens. Let me show you a couple slides to sort of illustrate this idea. Now, before we get started too much further, my opening slide is special just for you guys. It's kind of a slide I can really only use in Western Australia. You're probably going to want to break up into small groups and have a discussion around this. Before you break up, let's talk about it as a large group because we might be able to save some time. Here's the opening slide. Look at it carefully. Did anyone not know this? Okay, good. You knew it? Because I could tell you the reason. Did you want to hear a story about this slide? I mean, I don't really have a story about this slide. That would be gross. But you want to hear a story why this slide's here? So last year, I was the keynote speaker for the big American Society of Safety Engineers meeting in Las Vegas. So there's 6,000 safety people in this gigantic conference room. I don't know if you've ever hung out with 6,000 safety people, but generally, they're not that fun. No offense. I mean, you guys are way different than they are. They just weren't that fun. I mean, everyone used the handrail, super good handrail use, amazing handrail, best conference handrail use. So I think, what am I going to do? How am I going to start this presentation? And I think, I'll use the laxative slide. I mean, I can't really think of a reason to not use it. So it seemed to fit pretty perfectly. So I do it. I show it. It gets a pretty good reaction, kind of like here, sort of lukewarm. And I'm ready to give the rest of my presentation. And I'm standing at this podium, and I look down, And I look up, and this is totally true. In the back of the room, there's a person with his hand up. And I think, huh, I never really imagined this slide would get a question. You know what I mean? Like, if I had a question on this slide, I wouldn't ask anybody. I might Google it later privately, you know. So I'm in this big dilemma because I don't really know what to do, because a good presenter would ignore the guy, because there's 5,999 people that don't have a question. The problem with ignoring him is I'd never know what he was going to say, and I was pretty interested on what on earth he was going to say. So I did the unthinkable. In the middle of this meeting, it's totally true, I stopped and said, "Sir, do you have a question?" The guy stands up and from across 6,000 peers says these words, loudly and clearly, "Does the order you take them in make a difference?" So I added that line. Here's what I think is important about what we want to talk about today. Safety's not the absence of accidents. If I can do anything for you, it would be to challenge the definition. We have to stop measuring safety success by counting the number of people we hurt. It's stupid and it's wrong. But what it does is it puts us in this kind of weird, unnecessarily linear space where we think that safety is an outcome to be managed. It's not. It's an always present adaptive process, 1 to 19, ascending numeric sequential order. In fact, I would suggest even the word safeguard or the word defenses is way too linear. What you manage in your mind, what you manage offshore, what you manage in the company vehicles is the capacity for you to fail safely. And I got to tell you, when I ask you about that crane drop, is it a success or failure? I want to introduce this language to you. I think it was a successful failure. Because I think having the capacity to manage a successful failure is everything. Now, I can tell you what it's like to do work. You tell me if I'm wrong. I think your workers are as safe as they need to be. Without being overly safe, because we don't really pay people to be overly safe, in order to get their work done. This balance is amazing. Because this balance talks directly to the fact that workers find safety, and when they're safe, there's not a lot of need to become safer. So when you drive your car, when you're driving your car, how many of you drove in this morning? So I'll pick you because you look pretty smart, are you? You got a suit on. Yeah, you know if you look away, I'm still here, right? Okay, I'm just checking. How did you know while you were driving in this morning you were safe enough? Okay, so observing other cars, does that in and of itself ensure safety? You're not in trouble. I love you right now. How do you know when you're driving you're safe enough? Okay, so that's an outcome, and that's super sexy. It's seductively unambiguous. The problem is it means you have to wait till you get there to determine if you were safe enough. How do you know while you're working you're safe enough? And the quick answer is you're constantly managing risk. Because risk ebbs and flows. It moves in and out of your system. And workers are constantly becoming less safe, more safe, less safe, more safe. What's crazy is how incredibly effective workers are at managing this balance until they're not. Let me give you an example. What's the problem? Anybody? So if I had a whole room full of field people, the answer comes in about a half a second. It's funny, when you get up sort of the food chain, we want to talk about this in way different language. But I will tell you, if I had a whole room full of field people, somebody would have already said at this point, the van's the wrong color. No, that's what they said, right? Right? This is a very interesting failure. There's 46 pallets on top of this van. What's the problem? Say that again. Wrong tool, right? It's a classic wrong tool. He took a van to a lorry job, right? Is he a bad guy or a good guy? Talk to me. Let's vote. How many of you think this is not somebody you want working for you? Okay. How many of you think this is someone you want working for you? So the outcome's going to make a difference, right? Do you think this is the first time you'd ever done this? So here's what I'll tell you. The way we look at this colors how we respond to this. And I know, I took this photograph. I can tell you I know very little about it. It's not some exotic place, unless you consider Atlanta, Georgia exotic, and then it is, right? I stopped to get a Coke. I come out of the convenience store. You know how the doors go like that? The doors went, and then angels went, oh, and this was parked in front of me. I took this picture, and as soon as I took it, I went out to talk to the guy. I really wanted to talk to the guy, because all I really wanted to ask him is, how tall are you? Because I thought he's pretty tall looking from here, right? As soon as I got close, he drove away. I'm pretty sure he thought, nothing this fat guy's going to say to me, I'm going to want to hear. So I'll leave, right? I know nothing about this photo except for this. He didn't accidentally do this, right? He didn't turn around and go, shit, I put 46 pallets on top of a van, right? This was a substantive act. And because this substantive act is so important, we have to think about the deeper, richer context behind this. Because for some reason, somehow, in some case, this made sense to the guy. And what's amazing is how we look at the failure really colors how we respond to the failure. This is a Sidney Decker. I don't know if you know him or not. Interesting cat. Just saying. Tell you stories later if you want to hear them. Come see me privately, right? This idea is really, really important. Now, why is it so important? Well, let me show you my picture of a pointy stick, right? Now I took this. I'm not bragging about my photography, but if you Google the word sharp stick, you will get stuff you don't want to see. Creepy people use the internet. I will give you this picture, right? At the pointiest end of this stick are the workers. Behind the workers, management. Behind management, the organization. And behind the organization, there's the minister, right? Who's most likely to get injured on this stick? Who has the most power over the things that injure the workers? What's amazing is if you look at our workplaces, I will tell you something that you probably know. But senior leaders very rarely twist their ankle on the worksite. And if they do, you should start getting a resume out, right? I mean, it's going to change everything. The people most likely to get hurt are the people farthest away from the power. And that becomes really important in what we want to try to understand. Now, here's how a failure happens. This is really simple, but I want to build this vocabulary. Every event you have has three parts. There's the context, there's the consequence, and there's the retrospect. The context is everything that leads up to the bad outcome. That's the consequence. And then the retrospect is the way the organization understands the failure after it happens. Now, here's my question for you, and it's kind of a hard one. Which one of these three parts of a failure is least interesting? Is it context? Is it consequence? Or is it retrospect? Let's vote. We're a big crowd. How many of you think context is least interesting? Okay, very good. Thank you for playing. How many of you think consequence is least interesting? Good. How many of you think retrospect is least interesting? Okay, that's all I have. About half of you voted. Here's what I challenge you on. In my opinion, and I would really challenge you to leave this room thinking about this today, the least interesting part of an accident is what happened. If you drop 500 pounds of steel on a worker's foot, what's going to happen? If you want to make a foot smashing machine, what do you need? 500 pounds of steel and a poor worker's foot. Why do people fall down? Don't ever think this. Gravity, right? Right? I mean, think about it. Gravity. We have put an unusual amount, almost superhuman power over consequence. We manage resources, we manage budgets, we manage our time by looking at either the consequence or the potential consequence. And yet, what I'd suggest is the story of the accident isn't in the consequence, that's the outcome. The story of the accident is in the context. And what's amazing is that the context that happens is very different than the retrospect that we investigate. That's important. Here's why. We desire seductively unambiguous information about an event. We want the event to be as simple and as linear and obeying the laws of physics as it possibly can. When in reality, what we know, 1 to 19, ascending numeric order, The solution oftentimes is incredibly complex. And where does that take us? Well, I'm going to ask you to do one thing. Shift your thinking from why the event happened to how the event happened. Why is going to lead you to consequence. It's going to lead you to somehow looking at the worker and hoping that the worker would have done something differently. When in fact, how pushes you into the context of the event. Let's play with it. Why would you put 46 pallets on top of a van? Anyone? Yeah, you want to make it one trip, right? And he had to move 46 pallets. Perfect. Question two. How would you put 46 pallets on top of a van? And very carefully is a crappy answer. Okay, I'm not accepting that. How would you do it? What would you do before you had the forklift? He found a big old flat piece of concrete. He stacked those pallets. Then he took two 10,000-pound tie-downs, and he wrapped them and wove them through those pallets. Then he cinched the crap out of them. Then he took a cheater bar and took two more pulls on the ratchet. Then when it was good, tight, secure bundle, he took that forklift, put it on top of that van, and attached that bundle of pallets to that ladder rack. Here's my question to you guys. As field practitioners for reliable performance, which question gives you more operationally usable data? Why or how? How is a big change? Why is not a bad question, but instead of doing five whys, I'm going to ask you to experiment. Little tiny experiment. It's easy. Instead of doing five whys, the next time you go out there, do five hows. And see if how doesn't take you to a much different answer. Here's why I come up here. Workers are amazing. Your workers are so incredibly good at being safe that, in fact, my heart swells with amazement and pride when I talk to people, when I talk to the guys from Alcoa that invented the bun crossing thing. I'm stunned at how smart and effective workers are. They're masters of adaptive behavior. But our problem is I think we forget that. But let me illustrate it. When I ask you about driving to work, I was being kind of mean to you. When I ask you, I was thinking of this slide. You know when it's safe to drive. You also absolutely know when it's not safe to drive. The problem is I never put you in 100% safe or, God forbid, 100% danger. I put you in the middle. Your workers live in the space between safe and unsafe. And that space is really interesting. In fact, the lines that delineate safe from unsafe are constantly being negotiated based upon context. In fact, when's the only time I know for sure the worker was not safe enough? This is your part. Stay with me. Come on. Anybody? Anybody? As soon as we have a consequence. The crazy thing, you guys, is after the consequence happens, this is the cartoon of safety. The challenge is that before it happened, this is the cartoon for safety. Safety is not the absence of accidents. Safety is never the absence of failure. Safety is the presence of capacity for your organization to fail safely. My last question. Why do we put people in fall protection? Say that again. In fact, I would correct you, and I'm pretty... Are you strong? So do you think in a fight I would win? Okay, then we're good. I just want to make sure. I don't think we give a crap about the falling part. What I think we care about is the landing part. When you put a worker in fall protection, you've pretty much stopped playing the percentages on consequence. In fact, you assume there's a 100% chance that worker's going to fall. And you manage the ability for that fall to be safe. Let's do one last thing. Here's your homework for the conference. I'm going to ask you to do three things the next 2 days, and they're pretty important. Number one, listen and challenge the way you're thinking now. Because my bet is the biggest battle we have in this conference is to challenge this bias. Accidents happen because good workers become temporarily bad workers. It's complete crap, and challenge that. Number two, meet at least three people you don't know and I will personally come to each of you and ask you to list names. Don't try to bullshit me. I'm on to you. Okay? And number three, challenge the way we define safety outcome. Because I think the definition we've used for safety has taken us about as far as we can go. It's time to challenge that definition. So let's do one more thing very quickly. Stand up next to your chair and grab this pen. It's right in front of you. Go. All right, everybody got it? Here's your task. Point the pen towards the ceiling, and your job is to draw clockwise circles on the ceiling. If you don't know which direction that is, copy off the person next to you. I don't really care, okay? Now, here's your task. Always up, always clockwise. Bring the pen straight down. Straight down. Still up, still clockwise. Up, still clockwise. Up, still clockwise. Up, still clockwise. Look down and tell me what direction the pen's going now. Yeah, it's amazing. It's like I'm Harry Potter. You know what I mean? I mean, it's amazing. What happened? We changed perspective. Because here's what I'm going to tell you. If you looked at me and asked to give you the work instruction did not change. Up and clockwise, up and clockwise, up and clockwise. What changed is the way we looked at the problem. That's the opportunity you have today. I challenge you to tell both sides of the story. Without any further ado, that's my time. You guys are the best crowd ever.
It is impossible to oversell Todd Conklin. There's just too much of him. Thank you so much, Todd. Thank you. Thank you.
Man, Sydney was awfully nice to me, both at the front end and the back end. That's the presentation. Thank you so much for listening. But more importantly, thanks for being a part of this podcast. It doesn't work without you, and it's really fun to talk to you all these weeks. We're really, you know, we've done like, I don't even know, 60 episodes or something crazy. It's a bunch. It's way more than I imagined. And I'm glad you're a part of it. Tell your friends. The numbers seem to matter a lot, and you'll understand why, because I have an announcement to make someday soon here. And subscribe. Listen carefully. And if you want to be on the podcast or if you have ideas for the podcast, man, my ears are open. I'm wide open to your requirements or your suggestions or people you think would be good. And stay on me. If I don't get right back to you, I will. I promise. It's some priorities are priorities, and sometimes other priorities overcome this. So without that, as always, it's what I ask you to do. Learn something new every day. Have fun, because that's important. And for goodness sakes, be safe.